Welcome to Unabridged, the weekly podcast where teachers take on books. We're your hosts. I'm Sarah, and I'm here today with Jen and Ashley.
This is Ashley. We'll chat about our Unabridged Book Club's pick of the month, recommend related books, and share our nerdy English teacher love of reading with our Unabridged highlights and with short episodes featuring targeted topics.
To follow along with our schedule, visit our website, unabridgedpod.com, where the books we read are linked for purchase. You want opinions about books? We've got them.
Hey, it's Ashley. We just wanted to let you know that we are taking the week off for recording a new episode, but we wanted to look back over this year and share with you some of our favorite Unabridged short episodes from the past year. And so we are going to share those with you. The three that we have selected are books we don't recommend but would love to discuss, guilty pleasure reads, and book-to-screen adaptations, The Good and the Not So Good. I think that's the title. And so we want to share those with you. Hope you enjoy them. We look forward to getting back in the swing of things next week. Just a reminder that Dread Nation by Justina Ireland is our book club book for January. Hope you can read and join in our discussion. Happy holidays.
Hey, this is Jen. We are going to do one of our short story episodes today. Our topic is books that we hesitate to recommend but really want to discuss. So we are anxious for other people to read these books.
And we want to hear about it if you read them.
That's right. So I'll go ahead and start. The book I am not recommending but am eager to discuss is Social Creature by Tara Isabella Burton. This is a very dark, very gritty book. The protagonist is Louise, and Louise lives in New York and is barely making it. She has multiple jobs that she's cobbling together her money just to try to pay rent on a rent-controlled apartment. She is 29 and is keenly aware that 30 is about to hit, and that she had these dreams of being a writer, and basically starts to craft her existence around her friend. But it is not, let's just say it's not a healthy relationship. I hesitate to give many more spoilers, but it is very, very intense. So it reminded me, the jacket compares it to The Talented Mr. Ripley. Or Talented Mr. Ripley, which is a great comparison. It's that kind of torturous, like, obsession. It reminded me, too, what's that movie from the Single White Female? It reminded me of, like, that kind of thing. Or recently, I read E. Lockhart's Genuine Fraud. Like, all of these, there's some thread running through all of those. It wasn't particularly pleasant to read, but it was really compelling. I really was just drawn into it. I think the characters are really well drawn. So even though it's not, like I said, not the most pleasant, it's not like happy beach reading. But oh my gosh, it just moves, and it is a really well told story. If that makes sense.
Sounds totally captivating.
Yeah.
I just want to write it down.
Well, this is Sarah, and my choice is Bryn Greenwood's All the Ugly and Wonderful Things. So I think that the thing about this book is that it is very compelling, like you described your book, Jen. But there are just things in it that are that kind of challenge your how you feel about certain things, and it's hard not, I don't want to give a spoiler, but the book starts with Wavy. She is the main character, and she's the daughter of a drug dealer, and her father's a drug dealer, and then her mom is caught up in that lifestyle. She's a drug addict. She's just in this, Wavy is in this very unhealthy environment all the time, and she's 8 years old, and she has a brother, but throughout the book she seems older and more mature, but she's only 8. And just the book is about how we climb out of the situations that we're in and how we find solace anywhere we can. And it's compelling. At times, it's just this story of survival and just doing what you have to do to get by. But there are just some things that really challenged my belief system. Mm-hmm. And just at times, I just wondered, what am I rooting for here? Like, mm-hmm. what is the outcome that I am hoping will happen? And I mean, I enjoy books like that. I enjoy being challenged like that. But I mean, there were times when I had to sit this book down and just kind of get away, because I mean, your compulsion is to read it, mm-hmm. read it. But it is intense, and it is trying to read. So like Ashley said, and Jen, that these are these kind of books that that I wouldn't recommend to someone, because you don't know where they're coming from when they mm-hmm. read something. I mean, it definitely has triggers in it and things like that. But I mean, at the end, I was glad I read it. But it's one of those ones that as soon as you're done reading, you want to find someone who else who's read it so you can discuss it and debrief, because it's a lot. So,
which I will say is how both Sarah and I read it, because Ashley finished it and was like, oh my gosh, I have to read this book.
But I kept saying.
Yeah.
I'm not recommending it. But I can't stop thinking about it. And I couldn't stop thinking about it. I mean, I think exactly what you said, Sarah. And I mean, I think something that really stayed with me about that one is who has the right to judge. Mm-hmm. That was very much what resonated with me. It was like you said, it really caused me to question things that I thought were sort of basic, fundamental philosophies mm-hmm. that yeah. I assume that I have a foundation on.
Right.
But then it made me think that, yeah, there's always a story to tell, and that maybe I'm not in a position to assess that always. Mm-hmm. And that was the part that really stayed with me with that one. But yeah, I did suck both of you into reading that book by saying, I do not recommend it. Please don't read it on my behalf. I do not condone the things that happen. But I was glad when you read it and we could talk about
yeah.
it. Yeah. I mean, it has stayed with me also.
Yeah,
it has.
I mean, I read that one quite a while ago, and I feel like I can still pretty vividly remember a lot of it.
Well, and as soon as we determined what the theme of this episode, that is the first book that comes to mind. And I see it, I mean, I see it a lot on social media, and most people really, I mean, they're like, it's one of the best books they've read. I mean, mm-hmm. I haven't seen a lot of negative, I mean, and even on Amazon, there's 1,300 reviews and it's almost 5 stars. Mm-hmm. So
I feel like the kind of person who would pick up a book like that after hearing yeah. someone else talk about it is, yeah, this is a judgment too, but it's probably more likely to be okay with.
That's true.
Having.
Well, but I think what I like about that book, and really the one I'm going to talk about too, is it shakes things up. I think mm-hmm. I really like books that shake up what we assume we know.
Yeah.
And that's what I think it does really well. It's just calling into question what constitutes your relationship, what is permissible in society, mm-hmm. Who determines what those rules are. I think all of that is really highlighted, and in a way that's powerful. So yeah, I mean, again, it's like,
don't read it, but
we want to hear about it.
Or think carefully about reading it.
With all of these, if you read them, we want to yeah. hear about mm-hmm. it if you do. So,
cause it definitely has things that could definitely trigger
yeah.
particular readers and even, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I don't want to say any more before I give something away.
This is Ashley, and before I talk about my book, I just want to mention that we are here recording. It's summertime, and we are here with all of our children, and I can hear them in my headphones. So if you can hear them too, that they are just happily playing while we are recording. And I wanted to talk about a book that I'm hoping to suck Jen and Sarah into reading so that I can discuss it with them, called The Light of the Fireflies. And it's by Paul Penn. And it was translated by Simon Bruni. And Amazon just recently, it was back in May, they did a release of translated works. There were 9, right?
Yeah,
that they gave away for free for a window of time. And so this was one of those. And I came across it. I was in a waiting room somewhere and had forgotten to bring my Kindle or one of my books. And so it was one of those that then was sitting in my Kindle library from having downloaded it for free. And I arbitrarily opened it on my phone waiting to be called back and was immediately totally engrossed. And so it was just interesting because I knew nothing about it. I knew nothing about any of the nine that that I had downloaded. But this one, so right away, the narrator is a boy who's relatively young. I think most of the book, he's 11. And he is the one telling the story. And in the opening, the very beginning, he and his family are in a basement. And it's clear that all of them have been disfigured by fire and that they are living permanently in a basement. And so they've been in this fire. They're disfigured. And the premise at the very beginning is he is going toward the kitchen door to go outside. And his family is saying, you know, go ahead if you want. But, you know, you can leave at any time. But, you know, it's up to you. And then it's him battling whether he's going to go or not. And at that point, he wasn't 11. It was kind of a flashback. But it is him trying to decide if he's going to go outside. And his family saying, you can go, but we will never leave. And so a lot of the book is trying to figure out, it has kind of a post-apocalyptic feel, but the whole time you're wondering, like, is society normal, but it's just his family that's in the basement, or it has something happened. But as far as you can tell, there's not a larger event. It's just that there was a fire, they were disfigured, and they can never leave again, the basement. And it's him trying to figure all this out, and they all just keep a lot of secrets from him. And another thing that's happening very early on in the book is that his sister is having a baby. And so he's then going to have a nephew, and so, you know, the baby's going to be born into this environment. And that child, the narrator, he also was born in the basement. So he's been there his whole life, and then now, as a little bit of an older child, he is going to experience, you know, the baby who's going to be living in the basement as well. And a lot, like we talked about with All the Ugly and Wonderful Things, it calls into question how far you will go for the people you love. It makes you really wonder about what the right thing to do is when there are when things have gone wrong and it's not necessarily anyone's fault that they've gone wrong. How far do you go to protect people that you love? And I mean, like you all, I don't want to give spoilers, but I just feel like, I mean, there's a lot of twists and turns. A lot of times you think you as the reader think you know who's right and who's wrong. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of questions about that. And as things become clearer and kind of unfold, there's our kids. So as things become clearer and unfold, it just really makes you wonder, what would I do in that situation? Mm-hmm. What would I do for my family? And I just was completely captivated by the story and by the events. And then ultimately, I mean, similarly to we talked about with Brian Greenwood's book, it made me think a lot about what is right and what's wrong, and how do we know? And like, right. How do you move forward? When something happens, how do you move forward? And so, I mean, like the other one, I recommend with trepidation because there is a lot of controversial material in there. And I'm not saying that I agree with the choices the family made, but I think that the author does a great job. Sorry, they're just
very
like,
loud.
They're
children.
Loud. I think the author does a great job of causing the reader to think mm-hmm. and to really wonder about what should be done. And yeah, I mean, I was just totally captivated, blown away, and can't wait for either of you to read it, even though I'm not recommending it, because I'll be interested to discuss the events that unfold.
Yeah, that sounds compelling as well.
It does sound really good.
So I guess that's all we have to say about those. We'll come back with some more of those recommendations that are not real recommendations in a future episode. Hey, it's Ashley, and we are here with one of our Unabridged Shorts episodes, and we wanted to talk today about guilty pleasure reads.
So I'll go first. This is Jen, and the book I'm going to recommend and or admit to is a romance. It's called The Hating Game by Sally Thorne. It got a lot of buzz, I think last year, maybe 2 years ago, and it is just a full-on romance, and there's a lot of sex, and it is very explicit, and it is so good. Oh my gosh. The characters are coworkers, and they hate everything about each other, which of course they don't really hate everything about each other as the book develops. It's not going to shock anybody with what happens, but it's just really good. It has this really witty banter. It reminds me of like one of those old like Katherine Hepburn movies where they're just really smart and they just talk smack at each other all the time, but it's really fun. And it's not complex. But it's just a fun romance that's fast to read and really satisfying.
This is Sarah, and I have a few things to say on this topic. So first of all, when I talk about guilty pleasure reading, I like celebrity gossip, and I like to read about celebrities, so I do read People magazine. So most people would think that was a guilty pleasure.
Sarah's staring right at me when she says that. I think she's confessing it perhaps for the first time.
And I think I'm confessing it to Ashley. I read it.
We'll still be friends. Don't worry.
So I read People magazine. And then for guilty pleasure reads, for me, like, I always think of that as any, like, really fluffy, kind of what you were describing. Mm-hmm. So I haven't read many lately because I've been reading for the podcast and book clubs, and oftentimes those are not the ones that we read. But I used to love to read the Confessions of a Shopaholic books, which were pretty formulaic and really easy to read, and I just really liked them. And I love things set in by British authors, and a lot of the things are set in Britain or British people coming to the United States, and I just really like that. And so I read all of those. And then lastly, I'm going to talk to you about a guilty pleasure read that I want to read, which again, I'm sure Ashley especially will be horrified. But I
can't wait.
This is a true confession. But I want to read the book called Bachelor Nation, Inside the World of America's Favorite Guilty Pleasure by Amy Kaufman. And I haven't watched The Bachelor a lot, but the last couple of seasons I've watched because I listen to a podcast that recaps it, and I want to be able to know what they're talking about because they're awesome. Amy Kaufman is actually a legitimate journalist, and she talks about just reality TV in general, but also in particular about Bachelor Nation. But I find reality television super interesting, and I really am interested in the way that things are produced and behind the scenes, so I really want to read that. But I would say that's probably a guilty pleasure read. It's not gonna,
I heard it's great though.
I
will say from the other end that I would be very interested in reading that as well, actually.
Oh, awesome.
But it's because I don't get it, so yeah. I'm thinking like a book like that might illuminate to me what it is in other people's minds that does not work the same in mine. Because I'm interested in it too. Like, what makes that whole phenomenon tick, and what do people like about it, and how does reality TV draw so many people in? So it'd be fascinating.
And it's that whole thing between like scripted and semi-scripted and non-scripted. That I just find it. I find that whole reality TV and just the way that it has blown up in the last 10 to 15 years. I find it really compelling, so I really want to read that one.
What's the name of the series, the TV series that is like a scripted show?
I watch it.
What is it?
Unreal?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, it's really good. It's on Lifetime. It's pretty saucy, but it's a good one.
Does it fall in the guilty pleasure category as well?
It is, but it's real. That one, one of the producers of The Bachelor actually left, and she produces this show about the behind, and it's all about the producers, and it's fascinating.
And how they shape the narrative. I haven't read much of it. I've read a lot about how they shape the narrative. And, yes. Yeah, how they take people's stuff out of context to create the arc that they want, which of course they do. Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah. And the first season is really good. Mm-hmm. I think the last two seasons have been not as good, but I thought the first season was really good.
So I have to tell you a funny story. So my grandma, in her 80s, lived with us for a while because she was quite ill and she needed reading material. So I had a ton of Nora Roberts books at the time. So romance readers know who Nora Roberts is. So I gave them to my grandma. And so she would sit at our kitchen table reading the romance books. And if you walked through the room, she would start reading them out loud. Oh. So it didn't matter what it was. She would read it out loud. And her comment was, wow, if I'd had these, my honeymoon would have been very different. Oh. So I always think about Grandma when I talk about these books. But she loved reality TV. She watched the very first season of The Bachelor. What was that show? Joe Millionaire. She loved all of those things. And so it's just funny, my little innocent, 80-year-old grandma just loved that kind of thing. So there's something in it that, yeah, I don't know if it's escape. You know, I think it's serious stuff going on, I think.
I think a lot of that, I mean, like that, watching reality TV or reading a book like Confessions of a Shopaholic, it's all escapism because I think that, I mean, a lot of times we're reading stuff that's pretty heavy or, and definitely watching the news is pretty heavy. So it's just some way to, you know, just escape for an hour. I think that's okay.
All right, Ashley, I'm looking forward to this one.
So, the ladies are pointing out that I am not big on a lot of the pop culture stuff. I think like the reality TV thing is interesting because I feel like what bothers me about it is like the intensity of the situations. Mm-hmm. So I know that like I know other people watch it to escape and like not think about it, but that is precisely what I don't like. Is like it's hard for me to just be like, even though I know this stuff is somewhat scripted,
right?
It's still like these are real people and this thing is really happening. Mm-hmm. And like they're doing this to themselves. Mm-hmm. And they're like choosing to do it. Yeah. And sometimes that's hard for me.
Yeah.
That's hard for me in shows in general. Like I feel like you were saying, like I'll read heavy stuff and I don't mind reading it, but watching it, I want it to be like, I want it to be a comedy. I want it to be 20 minutes. And I want it to be really funny the whole time. And nothing, any emotional consequence needs to happen. That's what I'm looking for. So apparently I have an escapism problem also. It's just that mine seems to veer from the more mainstream. Yeah, the more mainstream desire. I'll be interested in that book. Going back to the guilty pleasure read, I'm just stalling over here. I am going to just go with my gut instinct here and talk about the Twilight series. Which I read quite a while ago, but still feel is at the top of my list of guilty pleasures that I have read. I think that what comes to mind for that is that it was grossly compelling. Mm-hmm. I could not stop reading it. When I finished the second one, because I think I had the first two, I remember that I had to go to the store like that night because it was before I had a Kindle, to purchase the next one so that I could read them. And the whole time, and I'm not trying to trash authors, but I will say that just as far as personal preferences go, Bella is all the things, all the tropes I dislike in what we show about women.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate that she is weak. I hate that she needs a man. I hate that the man is this like 100-something-year-old
sparkly
who is
vampire
preying upon her, literally. And yet, I was totally on his team.
Yeah.
What is happening to me? So, I mean, I think that it just did that. Like, I just think that it encapsulates when you feel guilty about something because it is 100% not what I affirm in the world or want young women to think or be reading. And yet, I could not stop myself. Additionally, again, I'm sorry to trash books. I feel like this should be the time where we talk about, what was it that we did, the unpopular, like, our unpopular opinions. I feel like this is falling in that category. Like, it's also not particularly well-written. And so I was constantly criticizing that in my mind the whole time I'm reading, and I could not stop. So I think that constitutes a guilty pleasure. And I do think I really like Sarah J. Maas, but when you were describing some of the more like explicit, gratuitous sex, I feel like, you know, I don't feel guilty reading her at all, but I think that it's interesting to think, I feel like she's very mainstream. I love her stuff, mm-hmm. but then like the Court of Thorn and Roses series has gotten into that romance mm-hmm. where it's a bit too much on like the romance side for me. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I think it could fall in the yeah. guilty pleasure category, though I do not feel guilt about that one. It was the Twilight. There's something about Twilight, sort of the themes that were being supported,
right?
The role of women in this story that I really struggled with, but it had no impact at all. I was like, there's a part of me that wants to be like helpless and yeah. need people. I don't know. Yeah. It uncovers some things about myself.
I was going to say, I don't really feel guilty about loving The Hating Game. I don't know what it, yeah. So guilty pleasure is one of those terms. I think we all know what it means, but I don't really have guilt.
I don't have guilt.
But yeah, when y'all were describing yours, then I felt like maybe I could choose a different one. But that was my gut instinct.
Yeah.
Like when we talked about the topic, for sure, that's the one that I mean, I was embarrassed. Like, I remember my husband's family was staying with us for part of it because it was over the holidays, and I could not stop reading it. And they were, like, fascinated that I was constantly reading this book. Yeah, so it was definitely that moment where I could not put it down.
I will have to say, I confess that I do not like People magazine. It's on our website. I don't know what it is, because I like a lot of stuff that people would consider to be trashy and celebrity gossip, and I love all of it, but I don't like People magazine. It's a weird thing.
I
Sarah's just shrugging over there.
I don't know what to tell you. I don't think I even love it, but I like to thumb through it. I like not to have to. Well, there's that also that thing where I don't want to read a whole book, but I want to read right. and look yeah. through something. Mm-hmm. And I don't like Cosmo and things. I don't like things with a lot of ads, mm-hmm. which I feel like a lot of fashion magazines have. Yeah. So I enjoy People because, you know, they talk about movies, mm-hmm. which I love. And
yeah. And that's what, I haven't read it. So I feel like I don't have an opinion about it. Like Cosmo, I like, okay. The mm-hmm. times I've read it, I'm like, oh, this is fine. But it's just not something I gravitate toward in general. And I mean, it is like pop culture is tricky. Like you said, you were watching The Bachelor because when you listen to the podcast, you want to know what they were talking mm-hmm. about. I feel like once you get outside of the loop of it, it's really hard to know what, like, people wouldn't mean anything to me. Because right. like, I don't know who the people are. Like, I don't keep up with any of it. And so then you're having to kind of learn the whole backstory in order to just follow along.
Right.
And so, yeah, I think I missed that train.
Today we are going to be talking about book to screen adaptations. We are going to talk about the good ones and the not so good ones. What do you think, girls? Do you want to start with our bad ones and then move into a more positive note to end
sounds
the episode?
Good. Sure. That sounds good.
I'll start us off. Okay. So I thought of two. Personally, there are so many because I love books so much. It's just, I feel like it's just so hard to adapt a book mm-hmm. that I love to something that I'm going to love on the screen.
Yeah.
But two that I thought were particularly bad were The Outsiders, the book by S.C. Hinton. Mm. So this is one of my favorite books. I taught it for years, and I just love these characters so much, and probably because I've read it so much, so it's probably not fair to the movie. But the movie, which my students tended to really mm-hmm. like, I just felt like was just so, it did not get into the heart of the book. It was just more of a really bland telling of mm-hmm. the story, but it didn't get into these emotions. And there was some really serious stuff that happens in the book that I did not feel was as developed in the movie. The movie is full of lots of very handsome boys,
yes.
but they just, it just is, I felt like it was subpar in terms of the adaptation. I felt like the book was just so much better. And the other is the Divergent series, particularly, I mean, honestly, for that whole series, I really liked the first book, and I felt like it got progressively worse for me as it went on.
Yes.
I did not think that was a particularly good adaptation. I felt like it had potential, especially the first book, but I just did not feel like it was executed very well. Mm-hmm. The casting was not my favorite, just in general for the whole cast. And I don't know, it just didn't translate well for me on the mm-hmm. screen. Mm-hmm. So those are my two, The Outsiders and particularly divergent out of the series.
So this is Jen. I had high hopes for The Dark Tower because that is one of my favorite books and my favorite series. So the first book in the Dark Tower series is called The Gunslinger, but and before the movie came out, I had heard some bad reviews, but I still was hoping that, you know, I can accept a lot. There was a lot of willing suspension of disbelief in this person. It was not good. And I mean, Idris Elba is amazing and I love him. He could not save the movie. It was like it took everything that made that book complex and interesting and looked at the friendship between this group of people, and it just sucked it all out of it to be this empty set of tropes. And so I was really, really sad when I saw the movie, because it was just like this action movie instead of having the depth that the series had. So unfortunately, my worst fears were realized.
This is Ashley, and I wanted to talk about Everything Everything, which is a novel we've talked about on our podcast and all really enjoyed by Nicola Yoon. But the movie adaptation was just disappointing. Mm-hmm. I think that there were things that they did in it that were interesting. A lot of the cleverness of the story is the way that the characters correspond with each other, and so like they're IMing and texting and stuff. And I think they tried to do some interesting things in the movie to demonstrate that, but those things did not work very well for me. And I also felt like it just kind of whitewashed the movie. Like, it made it seem like any other sort of YA typical all about the romance story, and I didn't feel like the book was that way at all. Mm-hmm. I just didn't think it preserved a lot of the uniqueness and strength of the characters and the way that their voices were so unique. And I also thought that there were problematic things that happened in the book, but that you could empathize with the different characters, whereas in the movie it felt more like there were times where you wanted to blame the mom for the situation. Mm-hmm. Everything just felt a lot flatter and less nuanced. And I know that some of that is just, you know, the nature of time, like that they don't have as much time to tell the story. But I also just felt like it just took away a lot of the voice of the characters that maybe could have been preserved some to keep the strength of the novel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you on that one. Okay, so now we can transition into better news, at least for ourselves, I guess, because maybe we won't agree with each other. So I have, again, two, because I love movies and I watch quite a few of them. So I thought that, two that I thought that were pretty good. One is The Fault in Our Stars, based on the novel by John Green, which we all know that I love him. And I thought that it was done pretty well. Like, yeah. I had a strong reaction to the movie. I almost think that I was more devastated while I was watching the movie than I was when I read the book. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it was because I read the book over time and then the movie I watched all by myself in a hotel room. And it was all this at one time. And I called my mother and I was like, I just watched the worst movie. And it was so good. I was just devastated. And I just felt like that's the appropriate reaction to this story. Yeah. Lovely and tragic at the same time. And so I thought that was pretty well done. And mm-hmm. what is really interesting is I thought this was very well cast, and the female protagonist in The Fault in Our Stars is the same female protagonist in terms of actress as Divergent, but I thought that this one was really well cast. Mm-hmm. I thought she did a great job. So mm-hmm. just shows the material and matters.
Her love interest in Fault in Our Stars is her brother in Divergent.
It's always right. a little weird.
Yeah. Because Fault in Our Stars came first and you saw the romance, and then yeah, that was weird. Uh-huh. Good point. And then my other one that I think was really well done for such a breadth of material was mm-hmm. the Harry Potter series, the movies. Because, you know, I mean, they're as almost, not quite, but as almost as beloved for mm-hmm. me as mm-hmm. the books. And And they're long, and they are, I mean, they really cover a lot of the material. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I love those characters, and I think they were so well cast, and they took so much time to make sure that things were just so, that I just really, I mean, I think they did a very good job, and I just adore those movies. And there are not many movies that are based on books that I can say that I adore. And I love those movies, and I've watched them so many times.
That's, I'm now, glad you said that, Sarah, because yeah. I didn't list that one, and I was thinking of all the book to movie adaptations. Yeah, I definitely love those the most.
Yes.
As far as they hold up on their own right, and yeah, can be watched again and again. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
So great.
Yes.
So mine are both... I will say the book is almost always better than the movie, but I have cheated a little bit and I have chosen two book to screen adaptations where I don't think the book is that great and it has ended in being something really compelling. So the first is one that will not surprise any movie lovers, but The Godfather is brilliant movie. I mean, the development of the character and the way that the scenes are staged, and there's symbolism in the way they build the characters and the way you see the arc of the family and of the individual people within it. And I read the book after I saw the movie, and it was fine, but it was like, yeah, there was not the depth that there is in the movie, and there was not the sense of, like, I think that's almost a Shakespearean tragedy. Like, there's not that sense that there's just this fate that is hanging over people. I think that's so much better done in the movie. The other one is a much more modern one. This is a series that is on right now, and it's The 100. And this is a YA, based on a YA novel. I've only read the first. I think it's actually a series. And the book was decidedly fine. I read it. And then the series is just great. So the premise is, it's in the future. Earth has become uninhabitable because of a nuclear event, and so humanity has survived by living in basically this gigantic space station. But we've been off the Earth for a long time, and the oxygen system is running, or is breaking down or something. It's been a while since I watched the first season, and so they feel like we're going to have to return to Earth. So they choose 100 kids who are criminals. They have, otherwise they would be put to death, they would be floated. But they're going to give them this chance. They're going to send them to Earth to see if Earth is now safe for people to live there.
Well, that sounds really compelling.
It is so good. And so there's all this, there's a lot about the dynamics of groups. There's a lot about who people are in groups versus who they are as individuals. There's a great deal about the adult leadership of, I don't know, of the space station, and then the way those decisions, some of them very difficult, are viewed by the 100 young people who have now been floated to Earth. So, for example, there's a rule that every family can only have one child. And if you have another child, you have to kill them because there's only room for so many people on the space station. So one of the people who's floated had hidden under the floorboards of her family's room for her entire life, and now she's 15. And she's being sent to Earth, which could be still irradiated. Anyway, it is so good. And I don't want to give any spoilers, but every season there's more complexity. There's more consideration of what people do to survive, what good decisions are, like how, what it takes to be good. It's just, it asks some hard questions. And the people that you think are your heroes sometimes do really awful things. And then suddenly, yeah, I find myself okay with them. And then, you know, it's that whole shifting morality. So anyway,
is that a series on like Netflix? Or?
It's on the CW, I think.
Oh, okay.
I always stream it on Netflix though, so.
Okay.
But I'm a season behind typically. Yeah.
Good to know.
Yeah, that sounds great.
That does.
So this was a hard one for me. I do not watch a whole lot of movies at all. And so particularly at this point in my life, and so I was kind of stretching. So I wish I thought of Harry Potter, the quintessential go-to for this particular thing. But I thought that the Hobbit movies really held up for me. My family very much loves J.R.R. Tolkien, and you know, read all of his books when I was a kid. Like, they were read to me often, and so I didn't love them as much as my dad and sister do as a child. But then have come to really enjoy the stories more as an adult. I mean, I like fantasy a lot more than I did when I was younger, and so a lot of his world building and those kinds of things I really enjoy. So I had read The Hobbit prior to the first movie coming out. And, you know, I was sort of all the criticism that came out about it. I mean, people were like, well, how are they going to stretch this into three movies? Why do the stretching instead of just making it a movie? But I really felt like I thought they fit together well. Mm-hmm. I loved the way that they built over time. And I mean, I've watched them a couple of times, and I thought watching them again that they did a great job of holding true to the original story, but also incorporating some of his other world elements from some of his other stories. And I thought it all worked together mm-hmm. really nicely. And I loved the way the characters interacted with each other. So, I mean, I just think, I just really appreciated each movie individually and then also the way they fit together as a series. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was really enjoyable.
I've never watched those.
Oh, they're great.
Have I watched Lord of the Rings.
I like Lord of the Rings more.
I do too. Like Lord of the Rings more. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I feel like, I thought the Hobbit ones were, turned out well, mm-hmm. all things considered. Mm-hmm. So.
Do you have comments or opinions about what you heard today? We would love to hear them.
You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher, on Instagram and Twitter at UnabridgedPod, or on the web at unabridgedpod.com. or on our Patreon page.
We'd like to thank Jared Featherstone, who composed our theme music, Strings of Light. Many thanks to Katie Amy of Amy Photography, our podcast photographer, and Tim Rieger, our videographer. Thanks for listening to Unabridged.